AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
As pennant races heat up in baseball and college football is a week away, the Pro Farmer Crop Tour had center stage this week. The scouts saw some real variable conditions across the Midwest, which no doubt will lead to more debate as harvest is right around the corner.
Live from just another regular day, well, mostly, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer and Ken McCauley, moderated by the Alberta Breeze himself, Sean Haney. In the first segment, Crop Tour comments from Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now filling in for Chip from Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio, Sean Haney.
Hey, everybody. Great to be here today again. Second Friday in a row, Davis. I'm feeling like this is a very warm welcome. I'm glad to be back, man.
I'm feeling very warm, too. Very warm feelings from this end.
Yeah, are you? That's good. What a week. Like,
oh, dude.
What a crazy week. You know, seeing all those scouts out there. Yeah, I know you guys have been talking about Crop Tour all week.
Yep.
What a lot of work that goes into come up with the numbers that'll be released here later today.
Yes, 1:30 p.m. Central Time is the official time for Pro Farmer. Now, it'll be Pro Farmer's Crop Estimates, which are sort of, you know, the way that we say it, they're informed by tour data, but separate. So we'll take those raw numbers, but then there are certain considerations that go in. There are calculations. It's all very scientific, Sean. There are calculators. I think I saw one guy with an abacus, actually. So,
well,
I mean,
it reminds me of this,
business.
Davis. Mm-hmm. It's like sort of like, you know, like the rebate programs that crop protection companies have, where, you know, you buy so much product and it goes into like a black box, a magic sort of calculator, and boom, you got your rebate. So that's where we're at. Yeah.
And that's how it goes. Yeah. It just pops out.
Hey, great stuff.
Very excited about it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? And if anybody wants to join in the conversation here today, make sure you send us a tweet and use that hashtag AgriTalk. Sorry, Davis, I interrupted you.
Yeah, no, not at all. I was just going to mention, we'll have Brian Grady up here in just a moment or so with some details on the Iowa-Minnesota numbers, and then that'll kind of put a lid on it. This afternoon, we'll have a deeper discussion with Chip and Brian, and who knows who else. Sean?
Yeah, good stuff. Hey, Davis, we've got some news today?
Just a little bit. I want to run down these numbers. Day 4, Pro Farmer Crop Tour. Scouts measured an average corn yield potential of 190.8 bushels per acre for Iowa. Compare that to 177.8 last year for the state. Pod counts in a 3x3 foot square came in at 1,218 for Iowa. Compare that to 1,146 pods in 2020. Looking at Minnesota, scouts measured average corn yield potential 177.4 bushels per acre. Compare that to 195.1 last year. Pod counts in a 3x3 foot square came in at 1,027 for Minnesota. Compare that to last year's 1,086 pods. Again, Pro Farmer production and yield estimates informed by tour data will be released at 1:30 p.m. Central Time today on the Pro Farmer website. And for members, it'll be in our newsletter and via email. USDA has announced $26 million in new investments under the Higher Blends Infrastructure Incentive Program to help retailers and fuel distributors upgrade equipment to support higher biofuel blends and boost biofuel sales volumes. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, Secretary Marty Walsh said Thursday the Biden administration will not seek an extension of pandemic jobless aid programs. The Creighton University Rural Main Street Index for August fell slightly to 65.3. That's the ninth straight month above the 50-point line, which marks growth neutral. And finally, Deere & Company now expects net income in fiscal 2021 to be from $5.7 to $5.9 billion. That's an increase from the level the company expected in May. Now, if I'm not mistaken, we've got Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer and Eastern Crop Tour director, on the line. Brian, good morning, sir.
How are you doing, Davis?
I'm doing real well. Thank you for. I know you're in transit back to the Pro Farmer headquarters to get the numbers out, to get the newsletter out for this week. We appreciate you taking a moment here. Discuss some of these numbers here. Iowa corn yield potential of 190.8 compared to 177.8. Is it Have we improved that much from last year's derecho impacted crop, or is there something else going on in Iowa corn?
No, you know, last year was the derecho, but it was also the drought in the western half of the state. And so, you know, some of that's present this year, but really the ear counts were really strong across Iowa again this year, up pretty significantly to 102.3 ears in 230-foot a row. Our grain length was good at almost 7 inches, and that's on 481 samples that we pulled out of the state. So we were in all 99 counties and took a high number of samples.
Well, and the bean pod counts came in above last year as well. 1218, I believe, was the final count on pod counts in a 3x3 foot square, compares to 1046 in 2020. What's the story on the bean crop?
Heavily potted crop out there. Generally clean. There are some water hemp issues and volunteer corn and stuff like that, but most of the fields are pretty clean, healthy, and we just need rain to finish them here. And so if we do get some of those rains, I think producers are going to be real happy in most cases. But in both corn and beans, there were pockets across the state where we ran into dryness issues that have already clipped yield potential. And so, you know, it's not a perfect crop by any means across Iowa. Pretty up and down in some of the areas. But overall, I think it is going to be a pretty strong crop for both corn and soybeans.
Last year, Minnesota's crop tour figure on corn was a stout 195.1 bushels per acre. This year, we come in at 177.4. What's going on?
Well, there's some drought issues, obviously, in Minnesota. Now, keep in mind, we go through the bottom three tier of counties, so we don't even go on tour up into that central and northern part where the drought's even worse. But we factor that in when the pro farmer estimates come out this afternoon. All that's taken into account, trust me. But just on the tour samples there, we did note, scouts did note, as they came across. There were dryness issues. There were inconsistencies. The pods counts just weren't real consistent, and it showed the results of the stress that crop has had through the growing season.
So the same stressors that limited the corn obviously limited the beans as well. Came in at 1,027 pods in that square compared to 1,086. And Chip even talked about, man, he'd seen some that may be past the point of return on the soybean crop.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Minnesota has its struggles this year. Now there are some areas that are decent and some that are good. Southeast corner is probably the best part of the state, but some of that crop will be helped by rains. Some probably is past that point of no return at this point.
Brian Grady, Eastern Tour Director and Editor from Pro Farmer. Hey, buddy, have you got one more? Can you pencil us in for more discussions to kind of wrap it all up this afternoon on AgriTalk?
Yeah, you bet. I got you on my calendar.
Outstanding, Brian Grady. Thanks. Sean Haney, I'm going to throw it back to you, buddy.
Hey, great stuff there, Davis and Brian. And make sure everybody, check out this afternoon's show to hear some of those results. Okay, coming up on the free-for-all, we've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer, and Ken McCauley, farmer from Kansas. We got a lot of issues to start with, and we're gonna talk about Afghanistan when we come back right after this.
From August 23rd through the 27th, your Farm Journal Field Days in-person experience will take you on the road to live events at America's top farms. Can't join in person? Register for the online portion to network with fellow farmers online and find original content for every segment of agriculture. No matter how you spend your time at Farm Journal Field Days, you're guaranteed a great time. There's a lot more to know about this week-long event, so visit farmjournalfielddays.com today.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD TV.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Sean Haney, your guest host here of Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio. We got a free-for-all here on this Friday. Going to bring in the group. Up first, it is Jim Wiesmeyer, pro farmer. Jim, I got to tell you, Jim, I'm upset with you. The Nationals pretty much traded their entire team. My Blue Jays are in a pennant race, and you've killed the season. Thank you very much.
I don't have a great outlook for you if you can't beat us.
No kidding. I have to agree with that. Also joining us here this week is Ken McCauley, farmer from Kansas. Hey, Ken, how are you?
Morning, Sean. I'm doing good. Got a little clouds this morning, but it is steamy hot here.
Above normal or expected for this time of the year?
Oh, it's expected, but you know, you have these cold fronts go through, you get a chance of a rain, and they kind of go, you know, other places. But we're still looking for a chance of rain here, maybe tonight. But, you know, it drops 20 degrees with a cold front and goes right back up. So it's good for anybody that has moisture, and we do. So, you know, that's a good thing. But it's really a roller coaster right now.
Yeah, how are your crops looking, Ken?
Well, you know, we're looking really good in northeast and probably the east, most of eastern Kansas, maybe the eastern half. But we had our Kansas corn meetings last week, and this was a shocker to me that I thought a lot of guys were in pretty good shape. Kansas corn production is going to be up a little bit, maybe steady, but northwest Kansas and central Kansas is really, really dry. But I think that's kind of what the pro farmer tour is finding, that, you know, that's not everybody is perfect. So I'd call our corn crop strong. That's we're not the garden spot for sure, but we sure got some good yields coming on corn, and soybeans probably are going to be pretty good too.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. I like to hear some of the positive. Of course, you know, we talk about some of the drought conditions we've had here on the Canadian prairies and dipping down to Montana and the Dakotas, and it's good to see there's some good spots out there as well on this half of the continent. Let's talk about Afghanistan. I'm not sure there's been a bigger story this week. Jim, it really feels, after what has happened here the last 5 days, that the bloom is off the rose for the Biden administration.
Oh, you know, definitely. And Amy Walter of the Cook Political Report with Amy Walter said there's little doubt that the honeymoon is over for Biden. The political question is whether or not between now and the elections, will Americans forget about this? I don't think they will, because you saw some vivid images that's going to define the first year of Biden's presidency, with those clinging, you know, to the landing gear of that departing U.S. military plane, John.
It's stomach turning watching that footage. Like, I've been captivated by it all week, to be honest with you, really trying to understand what is happened there. And the more I see that footage, and I think Fox has probably played some of that footage maybe 3,000 times, it's hard to describe it, what people are going through in that country and the concern that they have really for their lives now. Hey, Ken, when one of the things that caught my attention early this week on Afghanistan is when China's President Xi basically recognized the Taliban government. This should tell us something, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should. And, you know, when you see President Biden saying he's negotiated with the Taliban on how we can get our people out of that country, and it just, you're right, it's stomach churning. You know, there should have been a plan. I mean, maybe the Big Red One should have been part of that plan to make sure we get our people out of there if we are going to do what we did. And, you know, this is a huge mess. Even the networks, they don't even seem to be trying too hard to hide it. They're not sure showing, you know, the video that Fox is showing, but it's a huge mess. And I think Jim's right that everybody's going to remember this in the elections coming up. I sure hope so.
Yeah, you know, and Jim, President Biden came out and tried to address the situation earlier this week, and quite frankly, I was left really disappointed. He went, you know, he talked about why the U.S. is leaving Afghanistan. And if you look at some of the polling, Americans are in favor of the U.S. leaving Afghanistan. But the issue is this week on how the withdrawal was carried out. That's the issue. And he didn't even talk about it. They're sort of pretending like nothing's really happened here, even blaming President Trump, actually, at one point in the speech.
He said that there was going to be chaos no matter what. And I think that, you know, fell on, you know, deaf ears. It was the lack of planning, as Ken said. Why don't you have the troops there to protect at least your major airport that you know you're going to have to get people out? And that wasn't even done. So accountability is going to have to come, and not only with the president, but where's our Secretary of State on this one? Antony Blinken, he doesn't look good at all. So yeah, it just not only made the country look weak, it appears we are weak in some areas, and no American citizen wants to see that.
Does that concern you, Ken, that the U.S. looks weak globally in this situation? That basically it's a war of attrition, and the U.S. lost this war of attrition.
No, it sure does, Sean. And you know, I wrote down here we're looking weak, and you know, I hate to say stupid, but if there's a better word for stupid, that's fine. But we're really looking bad on this, and weak when we're in a stare down contest with people like China, a week doesn't work. And I just don't know that everyone in the administration or their followers understand that. So, you know, is there something else going on? Who's pulling the strings for Biden? I just think it's a huge mistake, and we're looking very weak. So, you know, how does this play out down the road? I can't see it playing very well for anybody that's supporting this process either.
Jim, with Xi supporting the Taliban or recognizing the Taliban government, it sort of is another example of how complicated the U.S.'s relationship is with China, as we, you know, try to get as many boatloads of corn and soybeans as possible into the country, number one ag commodity customer. Yet, obviously, in other equations, we don't agree, and this is a very complicated relationship.
Yeah, well, there's logistics concerns between China and Afghanistan on the border issues. But, you know, they're looking obviously at the precious minerals in Afghanistan. So they're going to take an opportunity for that. And, you know, as Ken said, even the Democrats now are want to hold hearings on where's the accountability here? What was your plan? You know, Mr. President, you know what, and they'll show the lack of it. And look at all the military hardware, the drones, the helicopters, etc. So it's just, there are so many follow-up questions on this that we're going to have to, you know, go through. A number of farmers, I was in Minnesota earlier this week for 3 days, and let me tell you, I've never seen central and northern Minnesota ever look that bad for corn, and those poor cattle producers up there trying to get feed and hay, and the inability of USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack to allow haying and grazing in early August was a big element there. But a number of farmers and others have asked me, why don't we keep a contingency force over there? We do in Germany and other parts of the world. Why not there? Because of the potential, you know, terrorist threats, and you know, that's a significant question.
Yeah, it is no doubt. Ken, Jim brings up some of the sorry, go ahead, Ken.
Well, that's really important, Jim, to hear that the, you know, you heard from the grassroots. I hear it a lot. Have to tell you, we had our corn meetings in Wichita in the same hotel the oil and gas industry was having their annual meeting, and Secretary Pompeo spoke to him, and he was in the hall with us, and I thought to myself, I sure miss this guy.
Well, the Wall Street Journal has a report that there was U.S. intelligence basically warning that if the withdrawal was not done appropriately in Afghanistan, that the Kabul could fall by the end of August. So there was intelligence telling the White House, Jim, that this was a risk.
Yeah, and now we can go back to the tapes in which various officials in the Biden administration said the opposite. So somebody's not telling the truth here, Sean.
Yeah, and it does, you know, it is easy to say that this, you know, Ken mentioned it, that this will impact potentially the next election. We'll see. You know, typically in the last few elections, not just in the U.S., but other countries as well, foreign affairs, it is hard for that to swing the vote. People are very concerned about their own pocketbook instead of something happening around the world. But this is a super, super, almost embarrassing situation that is even worked its way to Canada, being critical of Prime Minister Trudeau's, I guess, participation in sort of the blunder. We've got a lot more coming up on Agri Talk. We'll be right back right after this.
Agri Talk is brought to you by AGI SureTrack. Proper grain storage management leads to increased profit. With in-bin monitoring, you can hold grain, improve quality, reduce storage costs, and more. Bin Manager delivers all of that with automated bin monitoring from AGI SureTrack.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And it's time for Markets Now. Let's bring in Dan Vaught of Pro Farmer. Dan, I'm looking at the grains, and boy, there's a lot of red on the screen today.
Yeah, no doubt. I think the soybean market's leading the way again. It's kind of like a junkie that's been cut off from his supply of daily announcements of sales, and market's sinking as a consequence, and wheat and corn are following right along.
Yeah, so is this kind of just this lack of buying interest in sort of the dog days of summer? Is that a good way to put it?
I think that's part of it. And I think also with the rains we had this week, that people are thinking that it's triggered the usual late season decline you see in these markets.
And Dan, what about the meats here today? How are they trading?
Cattle and hogs are actually showing quite a bit of strength, hogs in particular. The cash markets, I think, are showing more strength, and I think that's the main reason for the bounce in the futures.
Yeah, you know, with corn sliding like 30 or 35 cents here this week on the December market, it probably is a little bit of feed cost relief for some of these livestock markets.
Yeah, no doubt, and the feeder markets have reflected that early today anyway. The feeders can buy more young stuff when the price of corn goes down.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think a lot of those livestock producers thinking about they're going to see a welcome relief on some of those feed costs, absolutely, for sure. Hey, Dan?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Hey, that's all the time we have for Markets Now. You cut off there. Sorry about that. Thanks a lot, Dan. Appreciate it. That is Dan Vaught of Pro Farmer Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your guest host today, Sean Haney of Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio. Hey, if you want to join in the conversation here today with us, call the number 855-482-5524. And for all you Twitterers out there, use the hashtag AgriTalk. We got a free-for-all. We got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer, as well as Ken McCauley, farmer from Kansas. Ken, I shared a story with you here earlier today, which, I know it's not in your state, but it's definitely the trend that we've seen across many states, and that is rising land values. There is a piece of ground in Iowa that sold for $19,000 an acre. There's some sticker shock for you. Ken? Oh, maybe we lost Ken. Jim, did you see that story?
Yes, I did. That is a WAPO figure. I just hope we get the corn prices to justify that.
Yeah, and you know what really grabbed my attention? That is that although average prices are up $2,000 an acre in the state, it's who's buying the land. So traditionally, it's about 75% farmer, 25% investor. And this story is on agweb.com. But currently, it's like 50-50. And that shows you that, boy, we're gaining the attention here in agriculture for at least the investment quality of land when it comes to things like hedge funds and family offices and things like that, Jim.
Well, that shows you their faith in the rise of the rest around the world, the need for protein, and that's corn, soybeans, and the meats. That's what I say in my speeches, and I believe it.
Yeah. Hey, Ken, we got Ken back now. Ken, price of land. Obviously, the market has gone up here in the last 12 months, but some of these values, like when I hear $19,000 an acre in Iowa for a piece of ground, that it's definitely not, it's hard to pencil that out, Ken. Let's put it that way. No, we don't have Ken. Okay. Well, Jim, the other thing that got my attention this week is the fact that farm bankruptcies are down in the U.S. as well. The story alludes to the fact that it's not a trend, but it is a good indication. I'm happy to see it.
Yes, but in some areas, such as in the South, of course, Southwest, where the drought is really picking up, they're just one disaster away from from bankruptcy in other cases. So it looks like we've turned the corner, except now we just have to have good weather for those very drought-prone states now.
Yeah, and it would be interesting to see the division between, 12 months from now, between crop farmers versus things like ranchers and the livestock side, because, if you think about the drought and the impact that has had on a lot of ranchers and the cow cull that's potentially in front of us in some of these drought-impacted areas, we're going to see a bit of a separation there when it comes to the bankruptcy numbers, won't we, Jim?
We definitely will. And again, I always like going to the Minnesota Corn Growers meeting because there's a lot of hog producers there as well. And I get to visit with other members of the state. But you talk about herd liquidation going on. This is very serious what's happening, not only in Minnesota, but at other cattle producing states. And we've talked about this before, Sean, on AgriTalk. At the time we get the additional meat processing capacity with this $500 million, dollars, grant money, if you will, to expand, capacity, which is a good goal. But by the time they come on stream, we're going to have, we'll probably be at the low of cattle inventory. So we've got some volatility in prices coming ahead the next year or so.
And what was the sentiment of some of those hog producers you talked to in Minnesota, Jim? Like, what's their outlook? How are they feeling about the months that are ahead here?
Well, the hog producers usually get on the regulatory side, that kind of the albatross that they see in some of the regulations. But again, on their feed cost, they're quite concerned. But their export markets have been pretty good, so I didn't hear the negatives. Their main question to me was when they were going to get these additional payments that many of them were promised in the waning days of the Trump administration, and at least those regulations were approved by the Office of Management and Budget. So the next, sometime in September, we should get an announcement from Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
And we're going to see some headlines in the Wall Street Journal and the Times where it's going to be, farmers have record revenues, right, in terms of receipts. And I know, Ken, you're thinking about the 22 crop and the fact that your prices are up, of course, and this crop is worth something in 21 and it looks like in 22, but 22 is going to have a different margin, especially when you think about the things like fertilizer increasing so much in cost.
Yeah, good to be back, Sean. The guys I talk to understand the fact that you've got high prices, so your inputs will go up. My take on it is that we've got a pretty good price and outlook for production to hold these prices, and maybe both sides will be happy and you can continue the demand that we need to sustain the higher prices. So, you've still got the international scene to think about here, but if you can hold the demand side, other than that, the rest of it will probably fall in line when you've got actual production numbers that you know, people worry about just a little bit on the consumer side. So that and the livestock issue, the livestock guys that I talked to that are actually thinking maybe the feeders are buying today actually might have some profit in them.
Yeah, I've been hearing that from some of our local feed yards here too, that, you know, if you have your feed costs locked, there's some money in these cattle to on this turn. So that's great to hear, because it is much needed. Ken, at that corn meeting that you were at, was there much talk about corn seed costs? Ken, are you there?
Corn seed prices?
Yeah. Was there much talk about
that? I'm here. Corn seed prices? Not really. I don't know that anybody has a real hard number yet, but I expected corn prices to go up, you know, probably 10% when you start looking at where corn prices have been. But if you look down the road at a $5 market versus, you know, close to four, 5% would probably be in line that most guys could really stomach and, you know, look forward to being able to say, I want the best stuff, and that's what most guys want. And I think the seed corn prices are probably fall in line with whoever, you know, pushes the competition.
Yeah.
And Sean, we're going to get an infusion of government, of, I should say, taxpayer funds later this year with WIP Plus coming out here for both 2020 and 2021 ag disasters, including livestock. So we're not going to see a dearth of government income assistance. So I think that bodes pretty good on the revenue side. Plus John Deere, earlier this morning raised their outlook on the expectations for continued strong farm and construction equipment demand. So that says to me that they have a pretty good outlook for the ag sector as well.
Yeah, but okay, that's true, Jim. And you've been on this logistics thing about some of the concerns logistically. There may be demand, but I saw this morning Toyota as an example. Lots of demand for vehicles. I was driving around car lots last night, and it looks like some of them are going out of business. They have just no inventory. Toyota is going to slash global production in September by 40%, closing, you know, it's going to affect 14 factories across Japan. One of the reasons is COVID gaining ground again in Asia. That's super concerning when it comes to chips and all the things that we want to buy, Jim.
Yes, and the cars, either used or new, that's on the lot are going to go higher, and sooner or later the Federal Reserve is going to realize that. So again, I think inflation rise is not transitory; it's here to stay.
Yeah, you know, Ken, when you look at the price of things out there, obviously you're buying stuff for the farm, but also just as a regular consumer. There is real sticker shock when it comes to trying to buy some goods, that whether it's the timeline to get them or it's what the price is when you go to the store.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it's hard for any of us to look and say, well, that's not inflation, but that is. And it all falls into the same category, as it's more expensive no matter whose fault it is. But I think it still falls into inflation because everything's higher. And, you know, whether it's a chip that you can't get for a car, I think it's going to land in the ag space here pretty soon of, you know, you have a lightning strike or something happens to your combine and you can't get it going, even though all the mechanical things will still work. So when you look at it that way and then buying new equipment, I think most guys are just looking at how much you need it. If you don't need it, I think guys are holding off, or at least buying a year old product. But, you know, you talk about Deere and their projections. They've got stuff sold out. They've sold the trade-ins, and they are really working this. And guys, it just kind of depends on who's buying. The guys that have the money are buying the new, trading in. The guys that need a little better deal are buying the one-year-old stuff. So I think these ag manufacturers have it figured out to where they're going to continue to make it work.
Yes, and I always tell farmers, don't complain about the cost of a John Deere tractor or combine. Get even. Buy their stock.
Hey, yes, well,
that would be right.
Good stock tip,
Jim. It's called a Texas Edge. Huh?
Yeah, that's a good stock tip right there. I like it. You know, you are so right, and we're saying the same kind of commentary to companies like Cat. It's really crazy. Who would have predicted this coming out of the pandemic? We've got a lot more coming up on AgriTalk. I'm Sean Haney, your guest host here today from Real Agriculture, and we'll be right back right after this quick break.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your guest host, Sean Haney of Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio. Hey, if you want to join in the conversation here today with us, call the number 855-482-5524. And for all you Twitterers out there, use the hashtag AgriTalk. Drop us a line to participate in the conversation here. Hey, Jim, I guess next week what we should be watching is the fact that the House is coming back to D.C. and they've got some things to work on.
On Monday, we'll consider several pieces of legislation. The Senate passed bipartisan infrastructure bill, a voting rights bill, and the budget resolution. That sets up the reconciliation process that would allow Democrats to pass the $3.5 trillion spending and tax package without any Republican votes. So House Speaker Pelosi has said that she plans the votes next week on the budget measure and the voting rights legislation, despite that group of those nine, centrist Democrats pushing her to vote on the infrastructure package.
And no matter what people think about, Pelosi's politics, this is really her wheelhouse, Jim, herding the cats and bringing people together to get what she wants.
No doubt. I mean, her history clearly shows that she'll knock heads around, and she has some earmarks. Remember the return of earmarks. She can get some funding in certain districts and states as a result to get the votes she needs. She usually gets what she wants, Sean. Powerful, powerful speaker.
Yeah. Ken, any thoughts on the House coming back and what you would like to see? Maybe a little bit more talk about biofuel aid and stuff like that.
Well, I wrote down here, Sean, that where is Biden on the RFS and all the promises he made? And that goes right back to Leader Pelosi. She is good at leading. She's good at herding cats. But these Democrats that are up for election in 22, while they were home, had to have heard some things. And I was pretty clear on how I felt about the one Democrat in the House from Kansas that she really needs to hear. A couple of small votes don't cut it. She needs to be stand up against these huge tax increases that they're trying to lay on us farmers, that they're threatening our existence with some of this stuff that they're talking about, increasing taxes on our capital gains and our estates. And it just scares me to death of what could happen. A person my age or older, or if you're in bad health, I mean, this should be a real killer for our future farmers.
Sean, in Minnesota, when I was there, Representative Angie Craig, Democrat from Minnesota, talked to the group, and she said she was with Vilsack the week before, in which he came out to Minnesota, and she told him and Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, that they missed a golden opportunity recently by not even mentioning the word biofuels when they're trying to sell this $3.5 trillion human infrastructure bill. So she got an applause when she said that.
Yeah, it, very, very interesting.
Especially in Minnesota, Jim. That's Minnesota's huge for that, and they're the infrastructure for blender pumps and things is nothing if you don't have the support for the big picture of how many gallons we're going to use and the RVO issue.
Yeah, they need the 15 billion gallon commitment that presidential candidate Biden seemed to promise. So we're going to see. But that's not really up to Vilsack, to be fair to USDA Secretary Vilsack. That's the call of EPA Administrator Michael Regan. And while commodity groups have gone gaga over him, he has not made decisions yet. So I want to see which way he comes out on this. And by the way, I told the corn growers there that they need a rebranding for ethanol. They need to call it a plant-based fuel because it has significant advantages as we go into these greenhouse gas reductions. So maybe they'll hire a PR and advertising agency to go after the non-ag crowd to tell them all the benefits of, you know, corn-based ethanol.
Well, and there's a
you're exactly right. Rebranding's a big deal.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen in this administration and the last one that there's sort of like this sort of flirting that happens with the biofuel groups, and we're left having the same conversations, questioning what their commitment is to the RFS and the idea of biofuels, Jim. It just feels like it's a sort of a repetitive process here over and over.
Well, the oil industry has some positive advantages by working with the ethanol industry. You saw it overnight when Marathon and ADM formed a joint venture for renewable diesel feedstock. They're going to announce a joint venture to produce about 600 million pounds of refined soy oil annually that'll be sold exclusively to Marathon to produce renewable diesel. That's going to be multiplied, I think, in the years ahead.
Yeah. Jim, Dairy-Aid, give us an update on that.
Well, Dairy-Aid, they announced finally, whenever, you know, Vilsack goes to a state, in this case, Vermont, you know, they're going to announce some, you know, dairy, you know, funding. And they did $350 million worth. But there's about $750 million more that he did not announce yet for, you know, the dairy industry that we expect relatively soon. It's already been signed off on. So I'm not quite sure what's the problem there. But hog producers and other producers, ethanol industry wants to know, where's that aid that we were promised in ethanol, $700 million, million dollars. That has been signed off on relative to the OMB again. So, and it's been a few weeks. So I think that they're looking for the right time to announce this, Sean.
Okay. Hey, Ken, very quickly here, do we start to see more talk about things like corporations having mandatory vaccines? We've had Tyson, Fauci was out this morning saying that, you know, this is one of the paths to getting more people to take the vaccine, is corporations making it happen. What do you think?
Well, it's a two-edged sword, Sean, that I think you're going to hear a lot more of it, but the message from the administration has been so confusing, and Dr. Fauci and all the stuff that, you know, one day it's good, one day it's bad, and the booster shots, so you need them or you don't need them. I think the processing industry needs it just to keep the lines running, but that it hasn't been stopping all the reinfections and the spread of the virus. So you're going to hear more about it for sure.
Yeah. I'll be in line for a booster shot.
Yeah, booster shots are coming. That's for sure. Hey, Ken, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it, Jim. Good to talk to you.
Sure.
Yeah, Jim. Great to see you. Great to chat with you, Jim. Okay, everybody, thanks a lot for tuning in today to AgriTalk. It's been a lot of fun being the guest host, and really looking forward to hearing some of those pro-farmer estimates here this afternoon.